Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining me today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and I am so excited to share with you today some really interesting health tips you may have never heard of before. You know, my guest and I, we're here to provide encouragement and hope if you have any health challenges that you may have concerning your lung health, and that is a topic today about lung health. You know, with the healthcare system changing and health insurance costs and coverage fluctuating and poor results, you know, everybody's getting crazy results with all of these treatments and these therapies. And you know, if you really are experiencing a really chronic issue, and your neighbor's getting great results and you're not getting great results, that can really wear on you, and you're really wondering what you can do to help yourself. So we're beginning to see, you know, what you can start doing for yourself. Long gone is the day, you know, when you can go to your doctor and he really knew you. I can remember calling up my doctor when I had my kids and they were younger, and he knew what you were talking about, and he knew you, call you by your first name, you know, and every time you went in, you got something that fixed you, and you were in and out the door and good to go. You know, now we have symptoms and we call the doctors. We get an appointment, we get tests done, and we hope for a quick and easy treatment and diagnosis, but really, it's not really the reality anymore. You know, so today we're going to talk about lung cancer. That pretty much is, for some people, the end of the road. All of these symptoms, all of these things that have been going on for years and years, and finally you get a diagnosis and you say, oh, good, finally now I know they can fix me. Well, some cases yes, some cases no. And then is it up to you or is it up to them or is it a combined experience? My guest today is Carl Helvey, and he's going to be sharing his experience about overcoming lung cancer with natural therapies. And he was given only 6 months to live, but I would like you to note that that was 38 years ago. So he's going to share his path he started when cancer didn't have so many drugs, you know, or experimental treatments as they do now. I really think he's a pioneer in finding out how to help himself out of a deadly diagnosis. And remember, too, that was a way long time ago before the internet. So all of his research, it was really intense with books and manuscripts and finding out from other people. It was not a long time ago that, you know, you could say that there was even an alternative treatment in the, you know, 80s and 90s. Even that was just when the internet came up. We just don't realize. We're so used to it that we don't realize it is really something new. So I'd really like to welcome Carl to the show and hear his great story. So welcome, Carl, to the show today. I'm so excited you're here. Can you tell?
Thank you, Dr. Gallagher. I'm happy to be with you.
You know, it is really, really exciting to do this. And because I really think that it's something that's so important to so many people. You know, how do you get out of this space? You know, what happens? What can you do?
Right, right.
You know, and I would love for you just to tell me, you know, what... Let's really start at the beginning. So that was so long ago. Like, how long ago was it for you, 38 years?
Yes, right. It was 38 years ago and in 1974, and I had a dream that told me to go for a chest X-ray, and I pay attention to my dreams because I feel that that is one way that God speaks with me. God may speak through our dreams, through our intuition, through other people, through things mm-hmm. we read, a variety of ways if we listen. And so I went to my doctor, and at that time you had to have a referral from your doctor to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And my doctor was very conservative, and so I didn't want to tell him that the reason I was there was because I had a dream. And
right.
so I just told him I'd like an X-ray, and he said, are you having symptoms? And I said, no. And he said, well, why? And I said, I just want one. Well, eventually he agreed, and so I had X-rays, and they found the spot in the right lower lobe, and he asked if I, that had not been there previously, and he asked if I would come in for a biopsy, and so I went into the hospital, and they did the biopsy, and then the doctor and the surgeon are at my side telling me they're doing surgery followed by chemotherapy. And I said, wait a minute, I don't make snap decisions. I go home, I pray about it, I make rational decisions. Well, at that time, doctors weren't used to patients, you know.
Even speaking up.
That's what they advised. And they told me, well, you'll be dead in 6 months. And I said, that's fine. That's my decision. Your responsibility is to tell me the pros and cons of surgery and chemotherapy. And my responsibility is to make the decision. And they kept saying, well, you'll be dead. And I said, well, that's fine. Well, I also felt I don't want to be debilitated for 6 months because I had worked at Bellevue in New York City when I first started nursing. And I had seen patients that had had throat cancer and they had removed the jaw and they had done all kinds of things. And I thought, I don't want to be debilitated for my last 6 months of life. But I came home and I contacted my good friend Ursula, and she offered to be available at any point, day or night, to talk if I had questions or got emotionally upset or something. And she said we'd watch our dreams and we would pray about it. And also she had a psychic that she knew in Florida, and she wondered if I wanted a reading. And I'd never had one, but I thought, well, what have I got to lose? So I had a reading, and we then compared our dreams and the reading. And they all pointed toward not having surgery and not having chemotherapy. And it reinforced my idea that I didn't want to be debilitated.
Right.
And Ursula knew a physician in Northern Virginia who had worked for the National Cancer Institute and had been having a lot of success with vitamin B17 or Laetril. And the drug companies had closed them down. And so he continued doing this in private practice, but I had to sign forms that I wouldn't report him. And so he prescribed, confirmed that it was lung cancer, and then he prescribed the physical aspects of care. And these included things like I took vitamin B17, 2,000 milligram daily, split over three doses during the day. And the vitamin B17, the theory is that there is a deficiency of vitamin B17, and so that this replaces it and will take care of the cancer. But also, a lot of the traditional literature will tell you that the vitamin B17 has Laetril, and it will kill you or send you to the emergency. But what it doesn't say is that the enzymes around cancer cells will activate the cyanide, but those enzymes are not around normal cells, so it's very specific for cancer cells. So I took the Laetril. I was on therapeutic doses of vitamin A and E. I started with 300,000 international units of vitamin A. Then the second week went to 150,000 and then went to 50,000 for the next 2 years. And the recommended dose, as you know, is around 5,000. And also it's a fat soluble, so that the excess is not excreted but is stored in the fat. So I was a little concerned about taking that, but my doctor told me that the vitamin E, which was 800 international units, which again was above the recommended dose, would take care of any toxicity from the vitamin A.
Well, you know, we do have to make a disclaimer, too, for people. Don't forget that neither Carl nor I are giving you diagnosis or treatment. He's just sharing his experience. So, Carl, do you have any disclaimer you have on your website and in your book?
Yes, I have the disclaimers in both, and all I do when I talk with people is share talk with people that contact me, and I hear from maybe 50 or 60 people a month, I tell them, this is what I use, but it may not work for you, And, you know, each individual must decide for themselves, because for some people, chemotherapy may work.
Right.
It wasn't what I wanted. And I think if you're taking something that you don't think is right, then it may not work for you anyhow.
Right.
And so if you think chemotherapy is going to work and surgery is going to work, great. There are ways that you can lessen the side effects of these things, and that's what I recommend to people if that's what they choose to do. So this is what I used. And so,
right.
Again,
mm-hmm.
I'm just reporting what the doctor prescribed for me.
Right.
I used a variety of vitamin Bs, B5, B15. I used a variety of minerals, zinc, calcium, magnesium. I was on pancreatic and digestive enzymes. And the doctor put me on a diet that was very similar to what is now a vegan diet, in that I had 75% of the diet was raw fruit and vegetables. I could have some additional cooked fruit and vegetables, but no protein. So there was no meat, no chicken, no dairy, no simple carbohydrates. So none of the good things like cake, pie, candy, ice cream. And so he recommended detoxing once a month, which consisted of one day where it was just fruit and vegetable juices. And because of being a nurse, I wanted a more holistic approach. And so to this, which I consider physical, I added some mental, spiritual, environmental, some relationship, and some political, because I believe that all of these influence our health. And so I look at health and illness as being a result of and overcome by a holistic approach. So the other thing I did was I continued exercising every day because I had no side effects. I continued working every day. I also ate maybe 25 apricot kernels every day. I'd carry them in my pocket, and when I'd think of them, I would chew up two or three at a time and then take a sip of water because they're quite bitter. But I added prayer. I was on several church prayer lists. I was on, I called Olga Worrell, who is a psychic healer in Baltimore and one of the best known in the country at that time, and I was on her prayer list. And I want to emphasize the power of prayer, faith, and optimism, and the research even is showing that those who are optimistic have better outcomes than those who are negative, that church goers, although I don't consider myself a church goer, I consider myself very spiritual and have a strong faith in a higher being, that the research shows that church growers have better outcomes than those who do not go to church. So there is something about faith and optimism that has a positive influence on outcome of any disease process. I added met affirmations. I did visualizations twice a day. I tried to improve my service to others. I tried to improve my patience, because I'm a very impatient person, and I tried to be a little more patient and a little more forgiving. And I tried to stay positive. And in my books, the last two books at least, I have exercises that people can do to help improve forgiveness, optimism, etc. So I did all of this for 2 years, and I went back to my doctor, and I didn't tell him I was doing anything, so he thought we were in a wait-and-see mode. And after 2 years, the spot was gone, and so he said he guessed he had made the wrong diagnosis.
And I guess you let him have that, right?
No, I let him believe that.
I figured,
you know, I'm pretty laid back. I don't argue with people. And so my friend who I had taught with at Duke, he was a professor of pediatrics at the time I was professor of nursing, and he wanted to see the x-rays and the lab and all of the tests that I'd had. Mm-hmm. And at this point, he is the medical director for Blue Cross Blue Shield for North Carolina. So I drove to North Carolina, and I took all the tests, and he confirmed that it was definitely lung cancer. But he said, I would not have pushed radiation and chemo and surgery, mm-hmm. because he said, I know you too well to do that.
Right.
So it was confirmed a third time, and I changed doctors not too long after that. So that's
my story. That is a long, long story. And, you know, and that's what is important for people to realize, too, is that when you go to the doctor and you walk out, whatever he gives you is not going to change your reality or your condition within 24 hours. Like when you have a sore throat, you take an antibiotic and your sore throat is gone. You know, when you finally get to the point of having a significant chronic disease or illness or something that is as cancer is, you're right at the end of an accumulation of symptoms over years for some people,
mm-hmm.
or maybe conditions that may have led up to that, and you ended up with that diagnosis. But it's mm-hmm. most important to know you don't just cut it out and send it to the lab and you're good to go for the next day, or we're just going to burn it all out and I'm good. Now, everybody thinks that you just leave it up to the mechanics to fix your car. Okay, but you still have to put oil and gas in it. You still need to wash it. You still need to take care of it. You still need to do all of those things and pay attention to it. Well, it's the same thing with your body, and they forget that there really is, you do have to participate. You can not have a good outcome if you are just sitting in the sidelines waiting for other things or people to do it to you and then mm-hmm. expecting the best, and that's really important. I mean, in the 70s, as you said, people were not speaking up then about their health care. Forget it. No way. I mean, in the 70s, I've been in healthcare since 72. And I'll remember, I mean, it was, you just did not do that. You walked in and it was usually a male doctor at that time still. And you just did what they told you to do and don't open your mouth, you know. So, I mean, that was really, you really were a pioneer at that time. And like I said before about not having the internet, you know, now anybody can punch anything in there and say, well, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a big difference.
Well, it's probably hard to believe, but when I was a nursing student back in the 50s, we stood up when the doctor came on the ward. We stood up when the doctor came into the classroom.
Yep.
I mean, there were so many procedures that were so oriented to the doctor.
Yeah.
Even in other professions.
Mm-hmm.
And the public just thought the doctor was like God.
Yeah.
And a lot has changed in these years.
I mean, it really has. And I mean, now people come into the doctors, you know, they'll call me all the time and say, well, I pulled all this from the internet. Can you do this, this, and this for me? And I'm like, you know what? No, I really can't do this, this, and this for you because there's so much more in the picture, you know. So kind of the internet may have given a lot of people information and they may be learning mm-hmm. to speak up. But there's still still that mentality of, you know, one thing is going to take care of it. Just one thing. I'm mm-hmm. going to do this one thing. And I'm going to keep going through the doctors or I'm going to keep going through the therapies. And I'm going to find that one thing that's just going to fix me. You know, and like you said, you know, prayer is part of it, taking care of your nutrition, doing everything all the way around in your life is what makes a difference. It's not
a
shotgun.
Well, you know, I think back of when I was in the doctoral program in public health, there's a theory that it's the multi-causation theory, that there are multiple factors in man, in the disease agent, and in the environment that lead up to a disease process, because not everyone has an accident when they go out and drive. Not everyone that smokes through their life ends up with lung cancer. So mm-hmm. there are multiple factors, and so it makes sense And also we looked at disease as a process, so you could intervene before the man interacts with the agent. You can intervene at an early stage to where it's easier to prevent, so which would be like in cancer, would be like stage 1 or 2, or
right.
You can intervene at a later stage. Well, the primary prevention is what public health primarily focuses on, preventing the diseases in the first place. So if there are multiple factors leading up to the disease process, then there are multiple factors that you use to reverse it.
Right.
And people, as they get lazy, they want a pill
right.
that will take care of it. But the pill, usually, if they don't make other lifestyle changes, often I have seen cancer come back over and over and over again. And it's those people that, and I blame the doctors to some extent, because doctors infrequently talk about, or at least medical MDs, infrequently talk about nutrition, and nutrition is such an important aspect of cancer prevention and treatment. And if you don't make those changes with the diet and with the exercise and the other things that research shows that has an effect, then the cancer is going to come back. And so it was as important to me to continue with a modified version of this to prevent recurrence as it was to overcome it in the first place.
Well, so many things play a part. It's sort of like we had said before about the car, you know. The brakes may wear, but if you're in the north where there's a lot of rust because of the wetness from the snow and the salt, you know, you need to pay attention to that. So that's an environmental thing. There's something else that's adding to that. You know, you can't just, like we said in the beginning, go to the doctor and say, okay, run down all your symptoms, you know. You've got, what, maybe a minute, 2 minutes, blah, blah, blah. Here, go for this test. See you later. I'll call you back if there's anything, you know. And I know all the doctors. I have been around them. And what they do is they look at that test. It says negative or positive. The negative initials it, set it to the side, you know. Positive, hands it off to the girl to call you in. It's such a, I think people really have the concept that doctors are really concerned and are really interested in getting you to a better state of health, and that really is not the case.
No.
You know, and that's very hard to hear. And they'll say, oh, but my doctor knows me. I see him at the grocery store, blah, blah, blah. The doctor has so much going around in their head. It's like this, it's crazy. It's going faster than the speed of light. You know, they've got a zillion things in their head. You know, you really need to be focused on your health. And I think that that is something that's very important that you point out in the book. You know, the name of the book is You Can Beat Lung Cancer Using Alternative Integrative Interventions. And I really think that's important because you really need to step up and speak up, you know, what else can I do? And like we even say about the diet, I don't know about you, but we're around the same age, and they turn around and they say, okay, here's the diet, and they hand you a little sheet on your way out, and you're supposed to follow that. Okay, sure. Does anybody ever do that? I mean, if you ever looked at the garbage cans outside of a doctor's office, everything is in there. They throw people
right.
walk out and they throw it out. You know, they don't do it because they first of all, they don't understand it. Second of all, they don't understand how they can get from point A to point B. And third of all, they don't see the benefit. And that's really important.
Well, we did a lot of that as public health nurses. We'd go out and visit prenatals in the home, and we'd visit different people that trying to keep them well. And it was the same thing. To try to get people to change their diet is a very difficult task. And it's not a one-time thing. It's a process. And it's easier if you can do it slowly, one thing at a time, instead of giving someone this big list of things and expect them to make this drastic change all at once. It's not going to happen with most
right.
people.
And they just don't. You know, I have, in the South here now, in Louisiana where I live right now, diet is so far from their concept. And they still think, oh, well, you know, we have farmers markets all around here. But the majority of people do not eat from there. And they say, oh, but there is. The farmers markets are cropping up all over. People are eating from them. It's about 10% of the population. So what is the other 90 doing? You know? Mm-hmm. And the other 90 is, you know, Coke is constantly reported here. If you go to a restaurant anywhere, you just set your glass down when you drink it down, you set it down, they're right back there filling it up, and you don't get charged for it. They just keep filling it up. And, you know, everything on the dish is brown or white, so that means, you know, deep fried, whatever, this, that, or the other. And then mm-hmm. white, it could be rice or potatoes or whatever it is. And it's so common. I noticed this the other day. We had gone somewhere. My husband ordered a hamburger without all the stuff, he said. He said, and usually people say, and the lady said to him, oh, you mean without the garden or without the vegetables? And they say, and they all laugh, and they say, oh, yeah, I don't eat that stuff either. And it's something so simple as, on a hamburger, a piece of lettuce and a slice of tomato. But, you know, you even look at that. How far have the health-conscious people come versus how far on the other extreme is those who don't eat that stuff?
Right, right.
You know? Right. And then you put in the middle is that tomato was probably shipped from Siberia somewhere and it's not really have any vitamins in it. And then it's iceberg lettuce, which is so funky, none of the health people eat that anyway. So you look down the middle. And how can you drag these people all the way over to your other side? And do you really want them to be there? Because they'll be miserable if they don't understand it.
Right. Well, the other thing I need to bring up is that tomato is probably genetically modified.
Right.
And the research has been so negative about, I remember back when I was in school, they did research on tomatoes that were genetically modified. The rats wouldn't even eat them, and so they force-fed the rats, and within 10 days, their intestinal tract was all abscessed from the genetically modified tomatoes, and I could go on, and it gets worse and worse. Well, our food supply is so polluted with genetically modified foods, with pesticides, with growth hormones, you name it, and fortunately, 38 years ago, I didn't have to deal with that because our food supply was pretty
pure then. Right.
But now, unless you have cancer or you want to prevent cancer, I think you almost have to eat organic, which isn't 100% pure either, but it's better than other. But if you have the local grown, the farmer's market that you mentioned, and you know their farming practices, then that's great, too. I buy at the farmer's market, and otherwise I eat organic because the things that are shipped in the wintertime from Mexico or from Peru or wherever, you have no idea what it's all about. And so I think it's very important that you eat organic or locally grown. You also mentioned Coke. And again, as far as any kind of cancer, the simple carbohydrate is one of the worst things you can put in your body because cancer cells thrive on simple carbohydrate to the point that the alternative doctors have taken advantage of that knowledge and they use something called the insulin potentiation therapy where they drop the patient's blood sugar level down, I think it's around 40, whereas the normal would be 80 to 120. And the cancer cells are barely surviving at that point. And then they give a shot of glucose with either, sometimes they'll use 1/10 dose of chemotherapy or they will use Laetril or one of the natural things. And the cancer cells, when that glucose comes, they're grasping, trying to take that in, and they're taking in with it the chemotherapy or the Laetril or whatever else that they have. And this has been one of the very effective treatments for alternative treatments for cancer. So simple carbohydrate is one of the worst things you can put in your body.
Well, you know, we've come so far to say of recent years, for people who have never known this on the health guru side, but other people just don't know that even with the white rice, let's take that for an example, they think that that's great, you know. They still think it's great. But you know what? When you go into the hospital, guess what you get? You get white rice.
White rice.
So
right.
apparently the doctors do not do or practice in their hospitals or their care facilities what they might actually do if it was them themselves. And also, I mean, how many times do you see people who have terrible GI systems and what's on their tray when it comes is liquids? And what is the liquid? It's Jell-O, which is sugar. It's usually white rice. It's usually ginger ale, which is sugar again. And then you get some form of like a chicken broth thing, which is totally useless in itself.
Right.
And you look at it and you say, wow, you know, my doctor kind of said that maybe I shouldn't be eating sugar, but then look at this. And they don't put two and two together to actually even know that.
Well, again, it goes back to faith, thinking that your doctor and the hospital and all these people are going to do what's best for you. And for one reason or another, they aren't doing what's best for people in all instances. Sometimes some of it is fine, you know, like when I had a herniated, I had a ruptured disc inguinal hernia, I was happy to have surgery. But in most instances, I try to treat everything naturally and not take chemicals, not have surgery. And, you know, there are things that come up throughout our life, minor little health problems, like men often develop benign prostatic hypertrophy where the prostate enlarges and it the urinary flow, it surrounds the urethra, and so the urinary flow isn't as good, and things like that happen throughout life. But I have found natural ways to deal with all of these, so I almost never take a chemical for anything anymore, because if you listen, you'll hear, well, it has this side effect and that side effect and that side effect, and if you have this symptom, call the doctor. And I'd rather avoid all of that. And back 50 years ago, we didn't have all of these drugs. People treated things naturally, and things were fine. As a child, my mother gave us, and this sounds terrible, and now they would say, oh, that's not good for you. But my mother gave us a sugar cube with two drops of kerosene on it in the spring for worms, because we were outside barefooted. And I don't know what kind of worms it was, but it didn't seem to affect us at all to take that.
Right.
I mean, now I don't like the idea of having taken sugar. I guess the kerosene was less of a concern. But, you know, I find simple ways to deal with things. For example, diverticulitis was one thing that I had about 20, 25 years ago. And the doctor gave me a prescription for steroids. Well, I didn't want to take steroids, so I thought, well, I'm going to try drinking aloe vera juice.
Right.
And I drank a little bit in the morning and a little bit at night, and in about 4 days, the pain was gone. And the doctor told me I'd never eat berries again, and I'd never eat nuts again. Well, since then, I eat 4 pounds of nuts a week. I eat berries every morning on my cereal. When I had my last colonoscopy, the doctor said, you have diverticulosis. And I said, yeah, I know. I don't bother it. It doesn't bother me.
Right.
So, you know, it's much better to me to do something very natural and simple than to take a harmful drug.
Well, things, you know, I think you have to take the edge off things. So, in other words, if, let's say you have a sore throat, and he's not going to give you an antibiotic for it, well, you may as well do what you can do yourself first, and then, you know, at the last resort, figure out something next. So same thing with cancers. I mean, you need to eat. You need to be able to take care of yourself. You need to still be able to get up in the morning. You need to still have a conscious mind to be able to make decisions, and you need to form your support group around you. I think all those things are your responsibility.
Mm-hmm,
because
right.
without them, exactly. you're really not going to get anywhere. You're still mm-hmm. going to be stuck in this one paradigm of do it to me, here it comes.
Mm-hmm. I think your idea about the support group, too, I didn't mention that in my cancer thing, but that is so important. And the research shows, you know, that in relation, in the stress research, it shows that the things that, in support, social support is one of the three important things to prevent a stressful situation as becoming more of a problem. And I think it's very important, but unfortunately, when you go against medical advice, you don't have as much support as
right.
you do if you go along with it. And back 38 years ago, even my mother, who I knew loved me very much, did not support my decision, and her mm-hmm. attitude was, well, why don't you do what the doctor wants you to do and then do these other things? And my colleagues, all being nurses, they were the same. You know, they were so medically oriented that going mm-hmm. against medical advice just was not acceptable to them. But I think that that is important, and I did have my friend Ursula, who was so much help to me.
You know, so many people these days, the families have so become disjointed. And I can say that a long time ago, you were in your neighborhood, you knew people, you had friends, you had family. There was always someone you could call on. And I mm-hmm. think now there really isn't for a lot of people. I mean, I can remember when I was in medical school and it was just my daughter and I in the state, mm-hmm. in the West, and I had a horrendous migraine. I mean, I simply could not even open my eyes, and I just really, it just came on so quick, I said, I'm going to the ER.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I got there, their first question was, is, what's wrong with you? Did you take any drugs? Are you a drug addict? Are you an alcoholic? What's your problem? And it was like, no, I just have a crashing migraine, and I simply cannot open my eyes, and I just want the test to make sure I don't have an aneurysm or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what their next question was? Well, you only have your daughter here, so who's your support system to come and get her? Because otherwise, we're going to call social services. Well, what do you do? You get up and you leave because you can't let your kid go to social services,
yeah.
and that means you can't get the help or the therapies or the treatment because they're not equipped to be able to take care of that part of you, you know?
Right.
So if someone comes in and you're really sick and they're asking for someone else for help, you really need that support, and where do you even find that anymore these days? I mean, how do
right.
people find that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really think the internet is great now because they can find it online, but that's not the same as having somebody sitting next to you just making sure, hey, it's okay, just look at you, it's okay, you know?
Right.
And I think that's important.
I think some people find this through their churches.
Mm-hmm.
I know that my brother was recently diagnosed with lung cancer, and has had a lot of support from his church members. I was in a Search for God group, which was a group that was interested in developing spiritually to become better people and to interact better with other people, and I got a lot of support. I get a lot of support from that group. So I think that the spiritual, religious groups tend to be supportive. I get support from some of my neighbors because I'm in a very small gated community group, and we have 28 families. And so you get to know people a little bit better than you would if you were in a large city.
Right.
So I think that, to me, the religious, spiritual groups tend to be groups that are supportive when people have needs.
Well, you know, and also, too, going on another side, we talk about the lung cancer, and when you said in the beginning about you have these treatments and therapies and you get that diagnosis and then you take care of it, so to speak, and you really do need to pay attention to your environment around you afterwards. After Katrina here, they were just ripping out stuff like nobody's business. The white, you know, the white dust was in the air, and you're thinking, okay, well, that's not a problem. Oh, well, whatever, it's just white dust because they're going about their business. But all of that was so much pollution that people were exposed to, but the state was, quote, still in a state of emergency. So it didn't matter. They weren't going to measure it. They weren't going to talk about it. It was just something that went by. And asbestos and mold and all of the other chemicals were just up in the air and everybody breathed it in. So, you know, you have to look at that. Is really the answers of the government saying, hey, it's really nice to go outside today, you're good to go, really true? Or do you just have to pay attention to yourself, to what you're getting exposed to? In other words, if you're really not feeling well and you have a cold and maybe you're just having something else, some treatments going on, do you really want to be, you know, waiting in traffic with a zillion other cars on a really hot day? You know, you have to think about these things, but how do we even people think about that? What might affect your lungs?
Right. And Los Angeles, for example, there are days where the smog there is so bad that they advise people to stay inside. And, you know, you mentioned the white dust and all. And after Katrina, they had the same thing after 9/11 in New York. And many of the firemen have had lung problems, you know, for a long since. In fact, there was a movie by Michael Moore, and I can't remember the name of it, but it was a spoof on the medical profession. And there's a scene where they're taking the firemen from New York to Guantanamo because they thought there they could get some care for these firemen that had lung problems as a result of the 9/11 that they weren't able to get in New York or by the federal government. I don't know if you remember the movie or not, but they ended up in Cuba, and they got medical care for their problems.
Yeah.
So it even was picked up in a movie that these firemen that were not getting adequate care for the lung problems that developed as a result of the environment after 9/11.
Well, you know, people don't realize that the environment is so toxic and polluted, and I really have the belief that people need to move away, you know, start making a stand. I can remember after Katrina, the government and the local people all said, oh, it's fine, come back, rebuild, and they kept pushing that rebuild stuff. When my theory always is the only reason they're repushing it is because if they don't have enough constituents in their area, then they don't have a job. And that's very important to note, because it's not safe to go back in a lot of these areas and be exposed again to those things, because you're not going to get the help. And once you're exposed, you're kind of finished. Asbestos, once it gets into your lungs, it doesn't come out. You can't sit there and just cough your way through it and it's going to come out. Or mold spores, unless you really have significantly increased therapies, it's not going to do anything. And what do you do then? You say, oh, well, it's just everybody's got it. Oh, well. You know, maybe people just need to start, like as we've always done with healthcare, is start making a stand saying, that city's not healthy, we're all moving. Or let's you know, move away from it, get away from it. Because that does make a big difference.
Now, the government seems to have done a little bit of better job as far as smoking in public places and all. Because I don't know, I need to mention that 3% of all lung cancer is a result of secondary smoke.
Right.
So you don't even need to be smoking. You need, but the smoke in your environment can cause you to have lung cancer. And so here, for example, I think it's that way pretty much everywhere. There's no smoking in public places and all. But I have a... there's a shop near where I live that I like to stop in every once in a while because they have antiques and all. But the owner smokes and all the people in there smoke. And sometimes it's so smoky that I turn around and I say, it's too smoky, I can't stay in here today. And I worry about, they have a son who looks like he's maybe 12 or 13, and he's exposed to that smoke all of the time. And, you know, I think that it's bad when parents expose their young children in cars and in the home and in their business and everywhere else to this smoke, because children don't have any choice. You know, they can't leave the home, and, you know, they can end up with lung cancer too.
Well, of course, too, a lot of us that are older are ending up with all these devastating cancers because of what we were exposed to when we were younger. I mean, I remember, and I'm sure you do all the time, people always smoked wherever they wanted, no filters on them, and it was everywhere. So maybe our exposures were at when we were younger, too, and they just accumulated to become this big paradox of cancer when we're older. You know, it makes a difference.
But so we're very polluted. The environment is polluted. Our food supply is polluted.
Right.
And there's no way the government can mandate you do this and that, and even though they try. But it's way beyond the government. So as you say, people need to take the responsibility for educating themselves and to do as much prevention on their own as possible, so that they don't end up with chronic illnesses. And I like to say I'll be 81 in about 4 months. I have used a modified version of what I did when I had lung cancer. I have no known chronic illnesses. I take no medications. I do take herbs and supplements. I am very active. I get up in the morning and I walk usually about 4 miles on the beach about 7 o'clock in the morning. I'm very active. I have a radio show. My eighth book came out, as you know, in November, and I did a book about 4 years before that. I talk with about 60 people with lung cancer every month. I write for a magazine. I have a monthly newsletter. So, and I have an active spiritual life. I pray every day. I meditate every day. And this is, to me, just a part of healthy living that we all can have if we take care of ourselves and avoid the things we can avoid, add the things we need to add to our diet, etc. And this is possible for everyone. It's just a matter of putting a little effort into your daily life and maybe changing aspects of your lifestyle. And it's not a one-time thing. It's an ongoing process.
Yes. Well, you know, we have about 10 minutes left. Could you give us a little bit of information about your books, the information they may be able to get into your books, and your website and how they could purchase? That would be great.
Okay. My book, I talk about what I did when I had lung cancer, very specific. I talk about what I have done since to remain cancer-free. I have a chapter.
Oops. Okay, so Carl got dropped, but he will call right back. So in his book is You Can Beat Lung Cancer. And it is using alternative integrative therapies. And he will be calling back in a moment. And this book is available on Amazon.com. And let's see where else it is. And his website is definitely has more information, and you will be able to find out information there. And if you give me 1 second, his website is beatlungcancer.net. And also his Holistic Health Show is www.holistichealthshow.com. And you'll be able to find out more information there also. Carl is in the U.S. He is in Virginia. And in Virginia, he will be able to give you some information. And Carl, you back on the line?
Yes. I don't know what happened. She cut me off.
I don't know. It just dropped. But what I just mentioned your two websites. And also the name of your book, so you can continue from there.
Great. I have a chapter by Bernie Siegel on mind-body medicine that talks about the influence of the mind on the body. A chapter by Dr. James Forsyth, who is a fantastic physician practicing in Reno, Nevada. He does research on all of his treatments. His latest research is a modification of poly-MVA, which many people have probably heard of because it's quite popular. He's added some natural homeopathic substances to it. He has followed a group of 500 patients over 5 years. They were all stage 4 cancer patients. His overall success rate for the stage 4 5-year survival is 46%, and for lung cancer is 39%. So the traditional is 2 to 5%. So he's having great results, and he has been targeted by the medical profession and the FDA, and they took him to court. He said they couldn't take his license, but they tried to bankrupt him, and it cost him a lot of money to defend himself. I think that speaks well for how successful he is, because he got their attention.
Yeah.
Francisco Contreras wrote a chapter, and he's at the Oasis of Hope. They have treated over 100,000 cancer patients with a holistic alternative approach. He uses things like high-dose IV therapy. He does ozone therapy, a variety of herbs and vitamins, and again is having a sevenfold survival rate over traditional with stage 4 cancer patients. I have a chapter by Kim Dossel, who is a PhD in nutrition, because nutrition is so important, and so she wrote about the importance of nutrition in lung cancer, and a chapter by Tanya Harder Pierce, who has written a very popular book on alternative treatments for cancer, and she wrote a chapter on Protocell, with many case studies on how successful this has been with lung cancer patients. Being a public health nurse, I was interested in low-cost treatment that people could do at home if they didn't have the money to go to an alternative physician, because health insurance will not pay usually.
Right.
And many people don't have health insurance anyhow. Hopefully they all will in the near future. But as of now, many do not have health insurance. So this is a low-cost treatment that people can do at home. And so, and again, we have the disclaimer that it is a low-cost treatment that people have done at home and have had success with.
Yes, and that is very important, too, is that anything you can do at home to supplement any treatments or anything that's going on with yourself is only going to benefit yourself. It's not like, you know, if you keep greasing those brakes on your car, it's just going to stretch those brake pads a lot longer, you know. So you need to really take care of yourself in that same fashion. And people think that their body is so separate from that concept, and we're really trying to emphasize the point. No, you really need to do something all the time. You can't just keep running on dead air all the time, you know, and throwing up your hands and something happens and hoping you catch the right drug. So I just wanted to emphasize that it's really important. Definitely, Carl has a great book. You'll be able to. Carl, and the name of your website?
My website is beatlungcancer.net. And for those that are interested in holistic natural approaches for other conditions, my website is holistichealthshow.com. And I do series. I've done arthritis, diabetes, back pain, seasonal allergies, and so forth. And it's all natural ways to deal with these health problems.
So I'd like to thank you today, Carl, for being on our show. It's really informative because, you know, that takes a lot of the fear out of it, too. People think they actually have no control over something that's coming down the pike, and we're trying to emphasize that you do have some control over enhancing the therapies you may be getting. So it's really, really important.
And I thank you, Dr. Gallagher. I've enjoyed it, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And, you know, can you tell us where they can purchase the book?
They can get it on my website. They can get it at Amazon. If they live in England, it's easier to get it from the publisher, which is Ayni, A-Y-N-I Books, but it's a branch of John Hunt Publishers.
Okay.
The postage is so high.
Yeah.
It's something like $40 to send a
wow.
book overseas. In fact, I had someone that wanted a book in Slavonia, and it was $45, and
oh,
I tried UPS, and it was $140.
Oh, my goodness.
And so Canada, I think, is about $20. So it's expensive to ship out of the state, but people that live in Europe probably can get it cheaper in England than they can to get it in the United States. And I think there is an Amazon. Yeah, there is in England, so they could get it on Amazon also in England.
Well, great. Thank you so much for being with us today. I hope we've helped some people just to realize that there are other things you can do also. You don't have to just sit by and just, you know, take what's put upon you. You can actually be a participating and getting better and healthier. Well, thank
great.
You so much for being
thank
with
you.
Us today.
And
thank you.
You. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So if anybody would like more information about Carl, again, beatlungcancer.net, I think. And anyway, his book is You Can Beat Lung Cancer. And definitely it is a book to look up. And you will find some reviews on the internet about it. And also his link to purchase the book and his website is on the description of the show from today. So it is included on that description page, the initial page where we're talking about the show and about Carl. His website is www.beatlungcancer.net or www.holistichealthshow.com. Thank you so much for being with us today. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and we hope to speak with you tomorrow about another topic that will help you just improve your life each day and make it a lot easier for you to be able to move to the next day. Thank you.